Money. We all love it. We all need it. But unfortunately, a lot of us don't know how to manage it. And please don't be one of those people out there that say, or maybe you know people that say money is the root of all evil. Money is not evil. If you're an asshole, or if you know somebody who's an asshole with a lot of money, the money's just going to make you a bigger asshole. If you're a good person, you're going to do great things with your money. We have this fear, a lot of us, about money and money discussions. But my next guest, he's going to give you some great financial advice because we could all use some. Next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Big shout out to all those brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. We salute you. Thank you for doing a fantastic job at protecting us every day. I don't give a damn what the media says. You are all doing a fantastic job. Keep up the fantastic work. Patrick here, host and creator. Thank you for tuning in. I know you got many options, but thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. If you'd rate and review the show, I sure would appreciate it on iTunes. You'll find a link on the cjevolution.com website. And for all of you who love coffee, and I know a lot of you do, check out the products from Four Sigmatic. You're going to love it. I love the mushroom coffee, the lion's mane, and it's not going to make you see pink elephants. It's the good mushrooms. It tastes great. Check them out and see if you love them. I'm sure you will. Big shout out to Law Enforcement Today, a great law enforcement publication. You can check them out at lawenforcementtoday.com. I got a new article up on this amazing publication. You're going to love it. It's What Do You Stand For? A Guide to Becoming the Best Version of Yourself. Check it out at lawenforcementtoday.com. And I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email, send me a text, DM me, and I will respond to you on to the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest. He is an active duty law enforcement officer working in the great state of Arizona. His name is Ryan, and he is an expert when it comes to financial planning and managing your money. Ryan, are you there, sir?
I am, Patrick. How are you, sir?
Well, I am very great, and thank you for asking. And first of all, thank you for your service as a brother in blue. I appreciate it. What made you become a police officer, Ryan?
So, right into high school, I knew I didn't want a desk job coming out of high school. I wanted to go out there and have some fun, and it was either law enforcement or the military. And I remember sitting in the Army office, and my mom came with me because I was only 17 at the time, and I was ready to sign up. I'm like, hey, I want to sign up. Look at that guy with the rifle in the jungle. That looks awesome. And my mom begged me not to. She's like, well, how about photography? So she begged me not to join the military. I went and got my degree instead, and I really liked the idea of being a police officer. The idea that everyone has of I want to go out and help people, that was obviously one of them. I like the idea of freedom, not being in an office, being able to go out, go wherever I want. And honestly, driving a fast car at the age of 21 sounded pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, and again, thank you for your service. Now, you're a lieutenant in your agency. So are you out on the road again, or are you just behind a desk or what?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because now I am behind a desk and I'm eating my words. Yeah, so I promoted up through the ranks, and now I'm over our Property Crimes Bureau, and I oversee a bunch of detectives and sergeants as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah, but your story about wanting to join the military, it flashed me back to when I joined the Army, and I'm still hunting after my recruiter because he lied to me. He was like, just jump out of planes, man. That's cool. You don't do much work. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll do that. And I ended up in the 82nd, which I'm glad I did, 82nd Airborne down at Fort Bragg. But yeah, I was jumping out of planes for almost 4 years, and I'm still hunting for that guy. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard they offer some lofty promises.
Well, Ryan, you've been doing it for a while, obviously. What do you think some of the big issues in law enforcement are and will face in the future?
So I'm thinking of my agency right now, and we have a very large agency, over 2,000 sworn officers, and one of our biggest issues right now, as we talked about earlier, is attrition. We have more people retiring on a monthly basis than we do that them are able to hire. Mm-hmm. So we are quickly going in the wrong direction and trying to stay ahead of the game, but the economy right now is doing so well. A lot of our guys are doing their 20 or 25 and out and finding better jobs. It's not like the old days where guys were working the 35 years in the career. So we're having a hard time finding eligible candidates as well that want to be police officers. Mm-hmm. And that kind of shifts into the culture that we're experiencing now of who wants to be a police officer. There is so much scrutiny, so much transparency that as we as departments are trying to do to the public that we're opening ourselves up for a lot more scrutiny than we had in the past.
Yeah, I agree.
For instance,
oh, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So for instance, our agency, we're rolling out body cameras okay. for all of our patrol officers. And it's twofold. I've seen more positive than negative in the body cameras because people make complaints and we can easily show, okay, let's watch the video. No, that's not what happened. Mm-hmm. But I think there's another side to it that society may not be ready to see what we do on a daily basis. Society doesn't always want to see the violence that sometimes is necessary in our job. That's kind of the wolf and the sheep mentality, if you're mm-hmm. familiar with that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, and that's everywhere, Ryan, you know that. I mean, attrition rates yep. through the roof. It's every agency, my former agency included. I mean, it's just, we're all jockeying for the same people, you know, and imagine down where you're at. I mean, all these departments are, whenever there's, you know, you guys are actively recruiting, everybody's jockeying for the same people. And like you said, the economy's great. Now, it's interesting you said that because then when the economy takes a tank or gets worse, people start flocking to law enforcement. At least they have traditionally in the past because those are pretty secure jobs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's when we can't afford to hire anybody because yeah. we don't have the tax revenue coming in. Yeah. So it's a double-edged sword.
Now, let's switch gears a little bit. Now, when I brought you on, I mean, you are an expert when it comes to finance, personal finance. Now, have you always been interested? What got you interested in finance? Was it something that you just had an interest in from a very early age or what?
No, not at all. So my parents, they were pretty good with money. They taught us about money growing up, but they didn't teach us about investing and how to manage money. Like, I remember my mom teaching me how to balance a checkbook, which we don't even really have checks anymore. But I knew not to go into debt. So when I became a police officer at 20 and a half, 21 years old, right out of the academy. And I spent what I made. And I didn't know any better. But I didn't have a ton of debt. But I was like, okay, hey, I'm making this much a month. That means I can spend that much a month. I was going out to eat every night. I never packed a lunch because I didn't need to. I was a single officer making tons of money for what I felt was, and I just spent it all. Mm-hmm. So moved down the road. Years later, I meet my wife, and she is really the catalyst behind all of this, which is funny that now I'm the financial blogger. But I had a car payment, and I was under the impression that cars will only go 100,000 miles, and then they break. So you can't drive a car over 100,000 miles or it's just going to break and it's not worth it. So I always had a car payment and she talked to me. She's like, why do you have a car payment? I said, well, that's what people do. And she's like, no, you're wasting all this money every month. So she started to really change the way I thought about things. And now years later, I'm a lieutenant and I have a Nissan Sentra with 186,000 miles on it. And I've done little to no work on it. So I've debunked that, but now it's just a challenge to see how high it can go. But so that's where it started many years ago of thinking of, wow, this is how everyone else does it. And it's not necessarily the correct way. So what really got me into finance is my wife is the saver. I was the spender. And we actually were able to save up a considerable amount of money. And so we have this money sitting in the bank in savings. And I personally knew there's a better way to handle this money I have set aside, but I don't know what to do with it. And as a cop, I have a hard time trusting people to begin with, and especially with money.
Sure.
So we went to a few different financial planner or financial advisors, and I went to a Dave Ramsey endorsed local provider. I tried all these people. And when I met with them, I just didn't trust them. I felt like, I think you are looking out for me, but you know, we're all skeptical. We're all cynical saying, you know what, but I know you're going to get a commission out of this. So mm-hmm. I just decided instead of relying on someone else to educate me, I would do it myself. And from that day forward, I just have read every finance book I can get my hand on. I've attended financial seminars and just done as much studying as I can so that I knew the answers.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point, Ryan, and how, I mean, you're in the industry. I mean, you're also in law enforcement. I get that, but you obviously are very knowledgeable in finance. How many financial people out there, financial planners, actually know what the hell they're talking about. I mean, it just seems they're everywhere. And I'm not saying they're all bad. I'm not saying that. But to your point, I mean, you didn't trust some of these people. Was it just because you understood that they were full of crap or what?
It's not that they were full of crap. They knew more than I did. But sure, some of these people that I was talking to, like this one lady, for instance, I'm speaking with her, and she obviously knew about investing. Mm-hmm. But while we were connecting, she was telling me about her financial life. And she's in her 40s trying to save up enough money to send her kid to college. And she obviously, to me, she didn't have her own financial life in order. Wow. So I'm like, why am I going to take advice from someone?
That's a good point.
That is not dealing with their own personal finances in a way that I would want. So it's really, and you can get into a whole different world of finance advisors, but some of them work for corporations and companies that have the company's best interest in mind and not the investors. And there's a reason that all those yachts in the harbor are owned by the brokers and not the clients. Mm-hmm. So it's a shame. There are some better ones that are fiduciaries that are required by law to act in your best interest. And that's who I recommend people to if they need a financial advisor. But it was a mission that I decided I wanted to teach myself about finance and then reach out and educate as many others as I could.
Now kudos to you, because I think we need more people like you out there educate, especially law enforcement. I mean, what are some of the problems? I'm not saying everybody out there, every cop out there is foolish with his or her money, but it's so funny where I know in my former agency, you'd drive into the parking lot and you'd see some of these cops driving like, you know, Audis and BMWs and things like that, but they can't, they're complaining all the time about money. I think that goes to your point about, you know, that you're with your car theory where you got a Sentra that obviously gets you from A to B and you're perfectly happy with, but you don't need to go out and spend a ton of money on a car that's going to depreciate anyway the moment you drive it off the lot.
No, you're so correct in that. And that's a spiral that these guys get into. And I was similar in a similar position. So, and it's interesting to me because as cops, we all have to be in control all the time. We go to a scene, contain, control, communicate. We are in control. We take over, we solve problems, but we don't control our finances often. We come home and our financial life is in a mess. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we spend all our time and energy on the job controlling things. When we get home, we don't want to make decisions. We don't want to have to deal with it. And then our personal lives go down the tubes. Mm-hmm. So, but you're right. So I walked through the parking lot. You see those lifted trucks. And I'm like, I know what you make. You know, we're making the same amount. I can't afford that. How are you doing it? Unless you married into money and you got lucky.
Yeah.
But it's, and then these guys start working off duty on all their days off, trying, you know, their side hustles to pay for all their toys or to pay for that large house. And it's a terrible habit and cycle to get into that a lot of officers have trouble getting out of.
Yeah, exactly. Because now, like you said, Ryan, now you're spending all your time to pay for all the toys when you should be spending time with your family and your kids because you don't get those years back.
Absolutely. No, you're right. And there's a lot of officers that have regrets in their older years that spent most of their time working. Now their kids are all grown up and they missed that time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I mean, the older I got in my career and I started to realize that I'm not, you know, I work to live. I don't live to work. And I mm-hmm. I always told younger officers that too. I mean, if they asked me, you know, I wouldn't preach it to them, but if I would say, look, man, I mean, you need, the job is important. Go out there, do a great job. But, you know, you have a life outside of law enforcement. Don't forget that.
Yep, absolutely.
So most people, Ryan, I know you don't know that, or you know, I know you know this, don't have enough for savings or retirement. You see it. You talk to a ton of people. You talk to fellow officers. What advice would you give them on getting back on track? Obviously, debt control and getting rid of stuff you don't need, right?
Yeah, so when people come in and I talk to officers and a lot of the stuff I blog about, the number one thing and plan you have to do is you have to make a decision and goal for yourself. Like, what do you want in this life? Do you want to live for the here and now and live off ramen noodle down the road, you know, when you get a few years older, or what do you want in this life? So you have to have a goal in mind and you have to start with a budget. Now, a budget, when I first met my wife, was a swear word because she brought it up and I said, you got to be kidding me. Like, a budget to me is restrictive. It means I can't have any fun. And why am I going to sacrifice now when I could die tomorrow? Yeah. So that was a big concern of mine, but I really changed my viewpoints the more years and months that you budget over and over. A budget is actually a great empowering thing because a budget tells your money where to go. So I make priorities every month in my life and say, you know what's important to me? This and this and this. And that's where I'm going to spend my money. And I'm not going to spend my money on this other stuff that I really don't care about. So for those guys that love their toys and their lifted trucks, I would never say, hey, you can't have a nice lifted truck. I would say, well, stop eating out every day at work, pack your lunch, and then you have enough money for the truck. It's just setting your priorities to what is it you value in your life. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, I love vacations. I would much rather spend time with the family, time exploring, going on vacation. So I drive this 12-year-old Honda, or I'm sorry, Nissan Sentra with 186,000 miles because I don't care about that. I would much rather go on a vacation. So the people that don't have enough for savings or retirement, I would say get on a budget and tell your money where to go, where you can start saving, but you can still enjoy life where you are now, because that's important. You don't want to hate where you're at now, hoping down the road you enjoy it.
And now, go ahead, Brian.
No, go ahead. It's budgeting and setting yourself up for success, creating good habits rather than just living for the moment.
And there's never. It's never too late, right? I mean, you can start. I mean, yeah, obviously when you're younger, it's better to start when you're younger, but you can start at any time, right? It's just a matter of getting into those habits.
It is. It is more difficult when you get older to retire wealthy, but you can change your habits at any time and set yourself up in a better position tomorrow rather than sticking your head in the sand. Absolutely.
Is there such thing as good debt?
So there are a lot of debates on this, and I had a recent debate with some friends of mine. So I am not a risk taker, which is funny because I'm a cop and we take risks all the time. But personally, for me, my family is extremely important to me. And as a father and a husband, my whole goal is to make sure my family is protected. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean as far as good and bad debt? So right now, the only debt I have is my house payment. And I am working side hustles and off-duty jobs as much as I can to pay that off as quick as I can. But some people will say, well, a house payment is a good debt or is good debt because it's liability or it's an asset. It's going up in value. So it's something good. You're buying something that's going to increase in value. But the way I look at it is if I lose my job tomorrow, I can't make my mortgage payment. So to me, that is still a liability that I want to get rid of, because if I pay that house off and I lose my job, I'm still okay. I could go work at Circle K and still be able to live where I'm at.
Yeah.
So there's some people that will talk about leveraging debt. They're like, you know what? I'm going to buy this house and then I'm going to go get a rental here and I'm going to go do this, because real estate is the big thing now. You buy a bunch of houses and you have all these millionaires. That's great if you can find renters, but what happens when you can't find renters for 3 months on a couple of those rental homes? Well, you're stuck paying the mortgage, and that's going to put you in a bad financial position, or it has the ability to. Mm-hmm. So I'm very cautious when I come to what am I setting myself up for? What's a worst case scenario? So I would say for me personally, and if you want to be secure, debt is never a good thing.
I've always been taught, and I have a nice house and I have equity and all that stuff, but a house to me just kind of, it's almost like a liability.
I completely agree with you. I feel real estate is a liability until you pay it off. So right. If I paid my house off, at that point, it's an asset because I'm not having to dump money sure. into it. I am for upkeep, et cetera. But so if I buy a rental, that's a liability until it's paid off. And then it's going to be generating income for me. Because if those renters leave, it's now a liability again. It's flip-flops. So I completely agree with you on that.
Yeah, and then the assumption is if I go out or you go out or anybody goes out and buys a rental, that the assumption is, okay, for one, you're always going to have renters, right? And then the economy is going to be good enough where that's going to appreciate, right? But what happens if the economy tanks?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And then you lose. Now,
and you always hear those success stories of the people who become millionaires and have 30 rentals, but they don't like to talk about the ones that foreclosed and went into bankruptcy because they couldn't pay for everything.
Well, I have a good friend of mine. It's interesting you said that. I won't obviously say his name, but he was a cop for many years here in Colorado, started a side gig on the side, got into real estate, made a ton of money in real estate. This is before 2008, if you know where I'm going with this. He decided to leave his job, good job in law enforcement. The economy tanked. He went down to Arizona, you're in the neck of the woods, and started up a real estate company, was very successful, had a ton of employees. Then the economy crapped and he lost everything.
Yep.
And then he was starting all over again and, later on in life. So, good points, man. Why don't you think the educational system, why doesn't the educational system, in your opinion, Ryan, spend more time talking about finance early in the education process? I know you can go to college for it, but shouldn't we teach kids about financial planning earlier in life, maybe grade school, maybe?
That is the million-dollar question, and
I have a theory.
Let's hear it. I would love to hear it.
I think the educational system wants employees. They don't want people to go out there and be entrepreneurs and make money and be, you know, have ingenuity and things like that.
That's true. I mean, the educational system hasn't changed very much in, you know, the past 50, 60 years. So, and that's what it was for. People were in trades and you went to work and you got into a company and you worked there for 60 years, you know? So that's very possible. But we would have people would be in such better financial positions if we could teach them personal finance rather than algebra and calculus in high school. it would set them up much more for success.
Yeah, why do you think that we're not doing this? I mean, I know you're educating a lot of people, but these are people later on in life. But what's your personal take on that? Why aren't we teaching our children? I mean, let me ask you this. I'm sure your kids, through you and your wife, are learning about finance, right? They're young.
Absolutely. Yep. And I'm teaching them that they don't get an allowance. They get commissions, really. If they do a chore, they get paid for it. They're not just going to get $20 a month just because they're breathing. So absolutely. It's teaching them to work for their money.
Yeah. And I still think that they should. And that's great. You're doing it as you and your wife, because I think a lot of parents don't. I think, like you said, here's your allowance for doing nothing today. But I still think our educational system needs to start, you know, teaching kids about this earlier on in life. I mean, I think like you said, we'd have people that were more financially literate and, you know, could take care of themselves.
Yeah. And maybe there's a big conspiracy theory out there, the reasons some credit card companies are behind this, but you do hear that. Speaking of credit card companies, is the first thing I heard when I was 16, my mom and dad got me a Capital One credit card that had a $500 limit. Why? Because I needed to build my credit. And that just means you need to start borrowing money to be good at borrowing money, I guess, you know, and it's completely backwards for where we should probably be.
Mm-hmm. So what would you give? And it's interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit about our credit card debt. So do you see in the people, because I know I remember hearing some of the numbers. Do you see a lot of people coming to you, or when you go talk to people, they probably have a ton of credit card debt? Is that the only... Go ahead.
Yes, it is. It's credit card debt and just consumer debt, because people will just swipe for their purchases on a monthly basis, and they get to the end of the month, they realize, oh, I didn't quite have enough money for that. That's fine. I'll pay it off next month. And so there's cops I know that have $20,000, $30,000 in credit card debt alone, which is astronomical when you think they're paying 17 to 18% interest every single month on that. And it's just compounding and building, and it's going to take them 30 years to pay off the credit card debt if they're making minimum payments. So yeah, credit cards are they're so convenient, but they are so tricky in that it's there's no pain associated with buying things with a credit card. Whereas there is a physical pain for me, at least, when I have $20 in my pocket and I have to give 15 of that over for lunch. You know what I mean? You swipe, you can deal with the pay or consequence later.
Yeah, you're right. There's a psychological aspect of it, because I mean, most people, I think myself included, sometimes, okay, you got $100 in your pocket, or do I use this little piece of plastic?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I'm just going to keep my money and use the plastic, and like you said, worry about it later on. And that's great if you have the money, you know. Mm-hmm. But even then, like you said, you want to kind of limit that credit card debt. Would you recommend people, Ryan, because people have credit cards, they're not going away, I don't think. Would you recommend that people will have no credit cards, or have one? Or because I think having a ton, like a handful of credit cards, I think it's ridiculous. Would you?
Yeah, so go ahead. I think it depends on the way you handle money, and if you're a spender or a saver. If your natural tendency is to overspend, I would say don't use a credit card. But we use a credit card every month, and we use it for points, and we get cash back. But we have trained ourselves to stay on budget, so we know our grocery bill is only X amount of dollars each month. So while we use our credit card, we track each purchase to know, okay, hey, we're getting close at the end of the month. But if if you have trouble doing that and it's difficult to track your spending with the credit card, then I would say get rid of the credit cards, you know, because if you're earning 2% cash back, but you're spending 20% more than you normally would, you're down 18% still. Mm-hmm. So I would say go with cash. You know, if you're saying I'm going to spend $600 or $800 a month on groceries every month, go at the beginning of the month, take out $800 and say, this is my grocery money, and start there. And then when it gets, a week left and you got 40 bucks, you got to figure out how that 40 bucks is going to go to the end. And that will keep you from overspending if you have difficulties with credit cards. But if you're able to set up a budget and you can maintain a rigorous set of ideas and actively checking it and monitoring yourself, and you have that ability, then by all means, use a credit card. But if you can't, cash is definitely the way to go.
And I think it's important, like in your case, and my wife and I are the same way, I think it's important in your case and my case that we have spouses that get it and that think the same way. I think, and you probably see this all the time where you talk to cops that where they're, one of them is a spender and they're trying to get the other, or the one of them's a saver and they're trying to get the other one who's a spender to start saving. And it's just like fire and ice. They're not meshing well. What do they say? Yeah. The number one reason for divorce, or one of them, is money, right?
Absolutely. And that's funny you bring it up, because that's how my wife changed me. When she wanted to do a budget, she came to me at the end of the month and said, look how much you spent eating out. It was $1,000 that month. And I didn't realize it, because you just go out, you go to lunch, you go to dinner with the squad. And then at the end of the month, I'm like, $1,000? Like, I like eating out at restaurants, but I did not get $1,000 worth of value. Yeah. So if having communication with your spouse or partner is absolutely necessary, and make sure you have shared values and goals.
Yeah, very important. Now, what advice would you give, Ryan, to people are living longer, you know that. What advice would you give to people who are, and I think we covered a little bit, who don't have much in savings in retirement? Maybe somebody who's middle-aged. What would you do? I mean, is it just start with developing good habits now?
Yes. The number one thing, get a budget and figure out where's your money going, because you're working on limited time here. So if you're middle aged and you have, say, 20 years or 15 years left in your career or towards retirement, or maybe less, you really have to decide what is important to me, because the more money you can put into retirement or in investments, compound interest can work quicker for you, which means it's going to double your money faster the more you put in there. If you take baby steps now, you're never going to get there. So the closer you are to retirement, the more drastic changes you have to make, which means controlling your spending, increasing your savings, and getting on a plan to set yourself up for success, because it's not too late. Mm-hmm. There's always time to make a change. There's just not always time if you never change.
Mm-hmm. And I know how compound interest works, but for those listeners out there that have maybe heard it before, can you explain that to the listeners and how it works? Because there is magic behind this.
Yeah, Albert Einstein called it the eighth wonder of the world compound interest. So compound interest, the way that I'll give you the layman's term is you put money in and it's going to start making money. And then, so let's say I put $10 in the bank. And then over a month, it turns into $18. That's what it's worth now. And then, so now you have $18 that's invested for the next month, and it just keeps going. So then that $18 turns into $26. Well, then if the market goes up in your investment, that $26 continues to grow, and it just compounds on itself. It doesn't start with one. You just don't always have $10. You have the amount that is added to it, and that continues to grow for you, and that works. So it's kind of like a train. Once you build up that momentum, you have a lot more money working for you rather than just your initial investment. So the more money you can get in there, the more that's going to build and build upon itself.
Excellent. And what advice would you give people out there about different types of investments? We talked a little bit about real estate. What's something else that people should maybe looking at, as far as something good where they can put their money?
Yep. So as law enforcement, we have access to a 457, a deferred comp type plan. And what that means is you can take money out pre-tax. So I invest heavily in deferred comp because it doesn't hurt as much. So money comes out of my check before I ever see it, and it starts investing. And I'll get to the different types of investments at that point. But that's a pre-tax type of investment. Mm-hmm. There's other types of investments that like a Roth IRA, which is awesome. A Roth is phenomenal because it grows tax-free. So let me back up. So the 457, as it grows, it's tax-free in there. We put the money in there that's I didn't pay taxes on, continues to grow. Let's say it grows to $200,000. When I start to draw money, say I put $1,000 in, it grows to $200,000. And when I start to draw money out in retirement, I pay taxes at that point. Well, at a Roth IRA, that's after tax. So if I start putting money in on the front end and I invest $100,000 of my own money over my career, and then say it grows to $200,000, when I pull that $200,000 out, I don't pay any taxes on it as I pull it out. So that's what's awesome about a Roth is you're paying the tax now instead of later, but it's easier to do the pre-tax like a 457 because it hurts less in your paycheck here and now. As far as investments, there's different types of funds, and tell me if I geek out too much on you. I don't want to get too in the weeds.
No, that's fine.
But there are there's index funds, and then there's actively managed mutual funds. Those are the main ones. And there's also bonds as well. But I'll talk about the difference between actively managed and index funds real quick. So what an index fund is it tracks the market. So you have the NASDAQ or you have the New York Stock Exchange, things like that. S&P 500 is the top stocks in the stock market. Top one all the way down to the last 500 company. So it's going to be your Apples and Google. So if Apple's weighted at 3% of the entire market, that's how big Apple is. That's how much you're invested in an Apple. And it goes all the way down. So if I'm invested in an S&P index fund, all my money is diversified between 500 different companies. So if there's fluctuations that happen, I just track wherever the market goes. And usually when you invest in an S&P index, you're going to pay a very, very low fee. So I think on mine, I'm paying 0.04%, which is really nothing when you think about it, because it doesn't take much money to track the S&P 500. Your money just does whatever the market does. Whereas you have an actively managed mutual fund. And what that is you have investors and portfolio managers that are looking at different funds. And they say, you know what? I think next month, Apple is not going to do well. So we're going to sell Apple and we're going to buy IBM instead. So they are actively trying to, their whole idea is to be better than the market. But what they do is they're not going to charge you 0.04%. They're going to charge you 0.8% or maybe an entire percentage. So they charge you money to do that, and they're actively paying to make trades. So where it really comes down to is if you look at the history, it's like 93% of all the mutual funds do not beat S&P 500 or an index fund over any period of time. Mm-hmm. And that's like the big secret that financial planners, managers don't want you to know about, because they make money off of that. They make money off selling their funds. And if everyone knew that index funds 93% of the time will outperform what they're doing, they would lose so much business. So there's a lot of tricks they do. Like for instance, and this is kind of interesting to me. So say for instance, you have 10 monkeys flipping coins, and this is a Tony Robbins analogy, and I love it. 10 monkeys flipping coins in a gym, right? So they're all flipping coins up and down, and you can imagine each one of those is a fund. So, you know, half of them are going to flip heads, half of them are going to flip tails, and then there might be that one monkey that flips heads out of heads every single time, right, for 10 times. So that's the fund they're going to put out to the market. Say, look at how well this fund has done, and they're going to sell that to everyone. Look at this, beats the market every time. But as you know, flipping coins can change in an instant, and then that fund could tank in a moment and then it's gone. So Just things to think about, the games people play. Index funds is the way I invest. I put all my money in that because it's diversified in itself.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You and Tony Robbins has a lot of good books out there. He has his latest one, I think, Ryan, talks about money, where he talked to hedge fund managers and all these people, billionaires. Ray Dalio, you know who that is.
Absolutely.
I was reading his book, Principles. I got to start reading it again. But it made me think about specifically when you said about 401s that even Tony Robbins is like, you need to look at these because there's so many different fees that they're charging you for.
Mm-hmm. So I was writing a blog post for one of my articles, and I'm not going to name the company because I don't want them to kick me out of their plan. But so I called them up and I was trying to figure out all the different fees I was being charged so I could lay it down in a post and I could say, this is the fees you're being charged. So I call up my company and I say, hey, I want to know how much you guys charge me on an annual basis. And they said, oh, we don't charge you anything. And I'm like, yes, you do. And it was a lady. She's like, well, let me transfer you to someone. So I transfer to another guy, and he's like, your plan, I think, is just the fees you're paying on your funds. I'm like, no, I know. You guys charge me an annual fee. And they weren't being dishonest. They just didn't
know. They just didn't know.
So I told him, you need to dig. And so he looks, and he finds on page 6 that they were charging me 0.23% annually for my plan. And it's hidden away in the pages, and they had to look through it. So the people that work for the company don't even know the fees.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. There are hidden fees everywhere that we need to expose so you know what you're spending your money on.
Well, and it's like the Tony Robbins said again. I mean, he said a lot of people, these people that are so-called experts, they're not experts.
Yep.
They have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Yep. You're right. So I'm glad you read Tony Robbins. I'm a big fan of him. And yes, he has Money Master the Game. It's a great book. I would recommend it, but I will warn you, it's like 600 pages. So be prepared.
Well,
and then he also has Unshakable as well, which is a very good book.
Yeah, and Ray Dalio, Principles. Have you read that one, Ryan?
I have, yep.
Yeah, and I'm about halfway through it, and I got so many books that I start reading, and then I get, you know, it's like the shiny object syndrome, and I start reading another book. But any final words, maybe some great piece of advice that you can give people out there, some quick takeaways?
Yeah, so we talked about a lot, and we're kind of all over the page here, but I really want to break it down to your listeners out there. It is not too late to change your financial picture or plan. If you are not happy where you are in life right now, then change it. Mm-hmm. It's that old quote that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. If what you're doing now is not working, try to change, do something different, create a budget for yourself, cut out all these monthly subscriptions, get rid of cable for goodness sakes and sign up for Netflix or Hulu. I mean, come on, you don't need to be paying $150 for cable. You don't watch most of those channels, but things like that, really examine what is important in your life and what do you want, and delegate money for those things that are of importance and make sure you cut out those things that you're just doing out of habit. For instance, going and getting coffee every morning. It might be convenient, but make coffee at home and save yourself $4,000 a year, you know?
Yeah, and there's really no reason why, especially, and this is just my opinion, Ron, there's no reason why that people can't do, there's so much education out there. We got information at our fingertips. We got people like you that they can go and they can get information from. There really is no excuse anymore because we have so much information at our fingertip. Now you be cautious with the information that you're reading or absorbing because some of it is BS, but a lot of it is good information that people can find on their own.
Yep, and it is. And you're absolutely right. There are some people that are in it for profit and ulterior motives. So you really have to find someone that you connect with, that you can learn from, and has a genuine heart that really wants to help you succeed. So that's why I started this. I felt I had a unique opportunity as being a law enforcement officer to help my other brothers and sisters in blue say, hey, look, we're on the same team here. I'm not here for an ulterior motive. I just want to help you because we sacrifice so much in our careers. We don't need to see our financial lives just gone in disarray. So it's time to get ahead of it now and really create some great things.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much, brother, for being on the show. Thank you for your service and your just amazing words of wisdom. I think it's so cool that you're out there. Not only that, I always think officers have to have and something on the side that they're passionate about. Well, they don't have to do what you want, but you're obviously passionate about finance, and you're helping so many people along the way. And not to mention, when you're done with wearing the uniform, which is good and honorable, now you have this to fall back on.
Yeah, hopefully, that's the idea. But it really is. It just helps. I appreciate all the accolades, but it just helps my creative side because law enforcement, sometimes we get put in our boxes, and this has really been an avenue where I've been able to help people from a different angle.
Yeah. And it's so good. And I agree with that, but it's so good to have, because you know, Ryan, I mean, I know cops like that just, you know, they're retired and they have nothing else, you know, and sometimes mm-hmm. they're forced into retirement. Sometimes they get injured or something and they haven't educated themselves. Not everybody, but some of them just they don't have anything else that they want to do or can do. You know what I mean? Because they haven't made themselves versatile. I believe in versatility. You need to educate yourself.
I completely agree.
Well, Ryan, my brother, thank you so much, and I hope you are staying warm. I know you are. I'm cold here in Colorado. You're down in Arizona, so I appreciate you coming on, and I'd love to have you back on sometime in the future.
I would love to, Patrick. Thank you for it. It was a great experience.
All right, brother. You take care of yourself. such a great time with Ryan. And if you want to learn more about what he's doing out there for law enforcement, check Ryan out at arrestyourdebt.com. That's arrestyourdebt.com. He's got a lot of free stuff on there. He's got a budget ebook, how to save your money, and you can contact him through the website, once again, arrestyourdebt.com. If you love the show, please rate and review it on iTunes. Folks, stay tuned for more great guests on the CJ Evolution podcast.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.